Welcome to the Flanatomy Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Flanagan. We're diving into the wild world of anatomy with a side of crazy stories from my bizarre life. Let's explore what makes you, you.
And I'm Kashia Reyna, your co-host, keeping it 100 and making sure Doc doesn't get lost in his wild tales. I'm locked and loaded with my phone to fact check and break down the nerdy stuff so y'all can vibe with the science.
All right, Kashia, today we're moving south of the head and neck down to the trunk, the core real estate of human strength, stability, and vanity.
Vanity? You're starting spicy already, Professor. You mean the abs, right?
Exactly. The anterior trunk muscles are the billboard of the human body. They get way too much attention for how little they do in isolation. But before we hit the abs, we've got to talk about the pecs and the serratus, the gateway muscles to the rest of the trunk. These are the muscles King Kong pounds on to show how strong he is. Pectoralis comes from the Latin pectus, meaning chest. Major just means larger, straightforward, big chest muscle. It's a thick fan-shaped slab that originates from your clavicle, sternum, and the cartilage of your first six ribs, then converges on the humerus. Functionally, it's the reason you can bench press, hug a tree, or throw a punch.
So the ultimate self-hug muscle. What's funny is that in cats, it looks totally different, right?
Yeah, in cats, the pectoral complex is split into pectoralis major, minor, and profundus layers, and they're narrower. Cats don't need broad pecs for bench pressing. They need streamlined musculature for forelimb adduction during running and pouncing. Humans evolved at this massive fan because we're tool users. We bring our arms forward, not just down.
Translation. Cats are stealth hunters. Humans are awkward orangutans that made hammers.
Pretty much. And when people say pec day, they're recruiting a lot more than just this one muscle. It's assisted by its smaller sibling. The pectoralis minor lies directly beneath the major. Minor means smaller, of course. It originates from ribs 3 through 5 and inserts on the coracoid process of the scapula. Its main job is to pull the scapula forward and downward. Think of reaching into your back pocket or shrugging toward your toes.
So it's like the hunch muscle.
Exactly. And it gets tight in people who sit hunched at computers all day, shortening over time and pulling the shoulders into that rolled forward posture.
As a trainer, I see that constantly. Half my clients don't need to train chest. They need to stretch it. Pec minor's the secret villain behind neck tension.
Next up, the serratus anterior. The word serratus comes from serra, meaning saw. Look at the side of a lean torso. You'll see those sawtooth projections between the ribs and the scapula. They look like the edge of a circular saw blade. A lot of the gym bros might refer to these as the fingers, because when well-built, the serratus anterior will look like the fingers of a giant hand on the lateral aspect of your trunk.
That's the one that gives boxers that ribcage definition, right?
Exactly. The serratus anterior is also called the boxer's muscle. It protracts the scapula, think of throwing a punch or pushing a door open. Originates from the upper 8 ribs and inserts along the medial border of the scapula's anterior surface.
And when it's weak, people get that weird winged scapula thing?
Yes, if the long thoracic nerve gets damaged, the scapula literally wings off the ribcage like a door on a broken hinge. I had a student who called it angel shoulder. Accurate, but less divine when you can't do a push-up.
Okay, now the glamour muscles, abs.
Here we go. The external abdominal oblique is the most superficial of the lateral abdominal wall muscles. Oblique means slanting. Its fibers run downward and medially, like hands in your pockets.
That's actually how I teach it to clients. Hands in pockets equals external obliques.
Good mnemonic. Functionally, they flex and rotate the trunk. You contract both sides. You crunch forward. One side, you twist. The external oblique also compresses abdominal contents, so it's a player in respiration and stability. Here's a fun bit. In anatomy labs, students notice how thin this muscle really is. It's the overlying fascia that gives the abs their armor-plated appearance when lean.
Right, about that. Abs are the diva muscles. Everyone wants to see them, but few people earn that ticket.
True. I'm walking around at, academic body fat levels. My abs are in witness protection, but they're under there somewhere, stabilizing every time I pick up a sandbag.
Meanwhile, I'm the one with visible abs, but ask me to carry your 150-pound sandbag, and I'll pass. Vanity doesn't equal functional strength.
Exactly. Function over form. That brings us to the next layer. Underneath the external oblique is the internal oblique. The fibers run perpendicular, upward, and medially, like hands on your chest. Internus means inner. It's a mirror-angled layer providing cross-bracing to the external oblique.
So they're woven like Kevlar?
Perfect analogy. The alternating fiber directions create a crisscross lattice that resists torsion. When you swing a bat or a golf club, both layers fire together. Internal obliques also assist in forced expiration and compress abdominal viscera. That compression stabilizes the spine, critical for lifting.
So when you're deadlifting or hoisting those sandbags, your obliques are basically your natural weight belt.
I think that is a great way to think about the obliques. I always tell students your core is the biological version of a lifting belt, minus the Velcro and gym selfies. Now for the poster child, rectus abdominis. Rectus means straight. Two long parallel muscles running from the pubic crest to the xiphoid process and costal cartilages of ribs 5-7. Those horizontal bands you see, they're tendinous intersections dividing the muscle into the 6 or 8 pack.
Depending on genetics and lighting.
Exactly. It flexes the vertebral column like in a crunch, but its true glory is posture control and maintaining intra-abdominal pressure. Every time you laugh, cough, or lift, it stabilizes the trunk.
And aesthetically, it's the muscle everyone obsesses over. But functionally, it's kind of boring, right?
It's honest work. Not glamorous, but essential. And since you brought it up, abs don't appear because you train them. They appear when subcutaneous fat is low enough, which for most humans means a level of leanness the body doesn't love to maintain.
So your abs are there, Professor. They're just shy.
They're introverted, prefer staying under wraps. Deepest layer, transverse abdominis. Transversus means across. Its fibers run horizontally, encircling the abdomen like a corset. Originates from the iliac crest, lumbar fascia, and lower ribs, inserting at the linea alba.
That's the real core muscle trainers talk about, right?
Yes. It doesn't flex your spine, it stabilizes it. Think of it as the internal pressure regulator. When you brace before a lift, that's your transverse abdominis tightening, pushing abdominal contents inward, stabilizing the lumbar spine.
So when I cue someone to brace like you're about to get punched, that's transverse abdominis engagement.
Exactly. It's also vital for respiration, supporting the diaphragm during forced exhalation. Weak transverse equals back pain. Strong transverse equals longevity in the gym and at your desk.
So anteriorly, it's layers on layers. External, internal, transverse, plus rectus running vertically down the front. Together, they make this dynamic pressure system.
All right, the abdominal wall is both armor and engine. It protects visceral organs while enabling trunk movement and breathing. And if you dissected a cat, strictly in lab, of course, you'd notice those same layers, but thinner and more fused, since quadrupeds rely less on spinal flexion.
Humans traded speed for core control. We stand upright, so our abs evolved into an anti-gravity device.
Nicely put. Evolution sculpted us for balance and breath, not just aesthetics.
Speaking of breath, you ready to talk about the deep respiratory muscles? Because I'm still thinking about your sandbag hobby. I saw your last post, by the way.
Ah, the sandbag saga. Let's just say my diaphragm got more work than my arms that day. Perfect segue, actually, because when you're huffing through a strongman carry, that's when you meet the real MVP of respiration. So, let's talk respiration. When you're gasping after a heavy set or hauling a sandbag, your diaphragm and intercostals are in a full symphony.
You mean like when you finish a run and suddenly realize your lungs have opinions?
Exactly. The diaphragm is the conductor of that orchestra. Etymology check, dia means through, and phragma means fence or partition. It's literally the wall between the thoracic and abdominal cavities. Dome-shaped, innervated by the phrenic nerve. C3, 4, 5, keep the diaphragm alive. When it contracts, it flattens, enlarging the thoracic cavity and pulling air in. That's inspiration.
And expiration is just the diaphragm relaxing back into that dome, shrinking the space and pushing air out?
Passive expiration, yes. But once you start exerting yourself, say you're lifting a 150-pound sandbag and trying not to swear on camera, you recruit help.
That's your famous sandbag circuit, right?
Indeed. Pick up a sandbag, carry it 50 feet, shoulder it, drop it, and repeat until your vision goes sepia. First lift, diaphragm does the work. Second lift, internal intercostals kick in. By the third, your external intercostals, scalens, and even your sternocleidomastoid join the party just to get air moving.
So your trunk becomes one giant bellows.
Exactly. Intercostals, the muscles between the ribs, literally mean between the ribs. There are external and internal sets. The external intercostals run obliquely downward and forward, like the external oblique, and they elevate the ribs. Inhale. The internal intercostals run perpendicular downward and backward, depressing the ribs. Exhale during forceful breathing.
So it's like a layered accordion expanding and compressing.
Perfect analogy. And for students listening, these small muscles are vital in stabilizing the rib cage too. You wouldn't believe how much proprioceptive feedback they give during deep breathing.
I've noticed during intense workouts, people start using neck muscles to breathe. Those scalens and sternocleidomastoids pop out like cables.
Exactly. Accessory breathing muscles. When your diaphragm tires, you compensate. Chronic stress, bad posture, or tight pec minors make that your default, which is why so many folks live in a state of low-grade breathlessness.
That's actually why I teach diaphragmatic breathing before any heavy lifting. If your breath pattern's off, your trunk stability's shot.
Absolutely. Breath is biomechanics. It's why singers, powerlifters, and yogis all end up preaching the same gospel. Learn to use your diaphragm.
And the cool cross-species tie-in? Some of these respiratory muscles correspond to prime cuts in butchery, right?
Huh, yes. In cows, the diaphragm is the skirt stake. Intercostals contribute to short ribs. Morbid, but instructive. Just remember, the next time you're grilling, you're basically looking at the architecture of breath.
Educational and mildly disturbing. My favorite combo.
All right, spin around. Posterior trunk, where real power hides. We'll start with the deltoid, though technically it bridges orders the shoulder and upper trunk.
Etymology?
From the Greek letter delta, shaped like a triangle. In humans, it's one big muscle. In cats, it's three. Acromio-deltoid, spinodeltoid, clavodeltoid. Function. Abduction, flexion, extension of the arm, depending on which fibers you use.
So kind of like a 3-in-1 shoulder engine.
Exactly. Below it, teres major, Latin for round and large, originates on the inferior scapula, inserts on the humerus, it adducts and medially rotates the arm, a helper to the latissimus dorsi.
And speaking of lats, your specialty.
Ah, yes, my pride and posterior joy. Latissimus dorsi means broadest of the back. Huge, fan-shaped, originating from the thoracolumbar fascia, iliac crest, and lower ribs, inserting on the humerus. It's the muscle of pull-ups, swimming strokes, and heroic cape poses.
You do pull-ups impressively for a bulky academic.
That's generous. The lats are the wingspan of the human body. Evolutionarily, they connect upper limb to spine, giving us that powerful adduction and extension needed for climbing and, nowadays, hauling groceries.
And above them sits the trapezius.
Right, the trapezoid-shaped muscle from occipital bone down to T12. It's divided functionally. Upper fibers elevate and rotate the scapula. Middle fibers retract. Lower fibers depress. It's like three muscles in one.
The trap game. People train it for that yoked look, but it's also crucial for posture.
Yes. Use, without balanced trap strength, you end up with rounded shoulders and neck strain. Interestingly, the trapezius and latissimus meet near the midline in a beautiful diamond of connective tissue, the thoracolumbar fascia. A reminder that the back works as an integrated sheet.
Then there's the supporting cast. Levator scapulae, rhomboid major and minor, splenius capitis, erector spinae, and of course the rotator cuff.
Let's break those down. Levator scapi outer scapulae, Latin razor of the scapula, originates from C1-C4 vertebrae, inserts on the scapula's superior angle, elevates and rotates the scapula downward. The rhomboids, so named for their rhombus shape, sit deep to the trapezius, retracting the scapula like you're pinching a pencil between your shoulder blades.
I cue that in posture training all the time. Pinch an imaginary credit card.
Then splenius capitis. Splenium means bandage. Capit means head. Looks like a wrap from the upper thoracic spine to the skull. When both sides contract, you extend your head. One side, rotation.
So when students nod off in class, that's eccentric control of their splenius capitis failing.
Ha, precisely. Then deep beneath lies the erector spinae group, iliocostalis, longissimus, spinalis. It's the backbone of posture. Literally, extends and laterally flexes the spine. Chronic weakness here equals back pain, city.
And the rotator cuff quartet, supraspinatus, infraspinatus, subscapularis, teres minor.
Exactly. Together, they stabilize the humeral head and the glenoid cavity. Supraspinatus initiates abduction. Infraspinatus and teres minor externally rotate. Subscapularis internally rotates. They're small but mighty, overlooked until injured.
As every gym bro learns the hard way.
Indeed. And in cats, you can see how these posterior muscles form sleek, layered sheets, enabling fluid locomotion. Humans adapted them for endurance and manipulation rather than sprinting and pouncing.
So, front and back together make the trunk a literal powerhouse. What fascinates me is how breathing and movement are intertwined, how your abs assist your lungs, and your back supports both.
Right. The trunk is a closed cylinder of pressure and motion. The diaphragm is the lid, the pelvic floor, the base, abdominal walls, the front, and erector spinae, the back. Everything you do, lifting, laughing, singing, depends on this pressure regulation.
And dysfunction anywhere in that system shows up everywhere. Weak transverse abdominis, tight hip flexors, stiff thoracic spine.
Exactly. That's why understanding anatomy isn't just memorizing origins and insertions. It's seeing how form follows function.
And how personality sneaks in. Abs are the extroverts, showy and social media friendly. The back muscles are introverts, quietly holding everything together.
Huh, I like that. And the diaphragm, the therapist, regulates everyone's emotions through breathing.
So true. You can tell how someone's day is going by their posture and breathing.
The somatic window to the psyche. You can't fake relaxed intercostals.
If that's not a t-shirt quote, it should be.
Final takeaway for the students. The trunk muscles are a community. The anterior group flexes and compresses. The posterior group extends and stabilizes. The respiratory group inflates the whole system with life.
And evolution tuned that community from quadruped locomotion to upright balance. Cats and humans share the blueprint, but we built skyscrapers on theirs.
Exactly. Next time you breathe deep or sit tall, thank your trunk. It's doing graduate-level biomechanics just to keep you from collapsing.
I'll never take a sit-up or a breath for granted again.
Nor will I take my next sandbag session lightly. I'll be hearing the Latin roots of every muscle screaming back at me.
You always say pain is the best mnemonic.
It is. Pectoralis major, burning, rectus abdominis, on fire, diaphragm, cramping, education through sensation.
All right, Professor. Before you hyperventilate on air, we'll call it there.
Fair. That's the trunk, front, back, and breath. Respect it, train it, and remember, anatomy isn't just about parts. It's about the stories your body tells when it moves.
Beautifully said. See you all next time on Flanatomy.
Where the jokes are corny, the Latin is correct, and the body is always fascinating. I am thinking we should grill up some skirt steak with chimichurri sauce. What do you think?
Sounds great, Doc. Let's eat. Bye, everybody.